On the committee at the hearing yesterday is State Senator Len Susio, Republican from Meriden. Senator, good morning and welcome to Brad and Dan.
Good morning. It's great to be on your show again this morning.
Senator, and you're quoted in some of the stories I've read today. You sat through that hearing yesterday. What did you come away with after that hearing?
I came away shocked and almost scandalized, really, because this was such a horrific case of a young, nonverbal, autistic boy who was starved to death and apparently physically assaulted by his mother as well. And DCF was on the case, but they actually got court orders. I mean, they went to court numerous times, got court orders for this woman to appear in court. She never showed up. She defied the court orders, and they finally gave up on it. They just gave up and figured they could get nothing done, and they actually asked the court to retract the court orders, and they closed the case only a few weeks before he was found almost dead in his apartment, and he did die only a couple hours after he was transported to the hospital. So it's shocking that they went as far as they did, and then, as I said during the hearing, they got to third base. They're waiting on third base, and they quit the game before they could get home. And as a result, there's a dead young nonverbal autistic young man who suffered a horrendous death. And it's just a legacy that is horrific, and a story that's horrific to think about, Dan.
Senator, as a member of this committee, and we're talking with Senator Susio, he's in our Touchpoints Rehab interview chair, as a member of this committee, did you get a satisfactory answer as to why DCF signed off on this case?
Well, I understand even the victim, not the victim, the child advocate, Sarah Egan, I think, came to the conclusion that they got so frustrated with the non-responsiveness of the mother. Again, they did make, there was testimony that they attempted to contact her and reach her 26 different times. They tried to take her to court 7 times. There were at least 4 different court orders that she defied, and they could get nowhere. And the commissioner herself testified that because there was no signs until the very end of physical abuse, they had limited authority to compel her to do anything. The most obvious thing and the most chronic abuse was educational neglect. He wasn't going to school. He missed hundreds of days of school. And as a result, they were pursuing that. And in fairness to the agency and the commissioner, I will say that there were no signs up until the very end that he was being treated that horrifically. He was definitely suffering from educational neglect, but the signs of physical abuse and the starvation were not there until the very end. There were other people involved, like Oak Hill School, who said that he had gone there, and they were shocked when they saw what happened to him, because when he did attend there, there was no signs of abuse or that he was being starved. So it was a shock to everybody, and I think they just kind of, they did give up, Dan. There's no doubt about it. They got to the end, and they were frustrated. If there's any good that comes out of this, is they are reforming certainly the internal procedures to prevent this from ever happening again. At the end, by the way, don't forget, they had to go to court to drop the case, basically, and the court hearing didn't last a minute. This kid was let down, and not just by DCF itself, but he was let down by the attorney who was appointed to represent him, as well as by the court itself and the school system. Everybody that could have saved him potentially dropped the ball, and it was a systemic failure of numerous agencies and individuals, not just one particular department or individual that let him down.
Well, and Senator, I was going to ask you, are the courts also at fault? But it seems to me you have a system in place of checks and balances, DCF, court system, public attorney, the school system. It seems the checks and balances didn't work at all here. They all dropped the ball.
That's the thing that's maddening about this. If any one person or agency or institution had been more aggressive about this, he might possibly have been saved. Nobody did. Everybody kind of gave up because she was, I mean, it wasn't a question that they were even able to talk to her. They were not able to reach her or contact her since March of 2016 until his death in February of 2017. So she was just refusing any communication whatsoever. She's definitely herself, obviously, a very troubled woman, both emotionally and psychologically. And there was a history of depression in the family. And her mother, who died, by the way, during the interim period. And I personally suspect that was a big event. When the mother passed away sometime between March of 2016 and Matthew died, I think that's when things started falling apart. She, the grandmother, was, I think, an important caretaker, mm-hmm. even though she had her own problems. And when she passed away, I think that's when this thing really degenerated into the starvation and the potential physical abuse that were inflicted on Matthew. So, you know, it's, you look back and you scratch your head and you say, my God, it's so obvious. It should have been caught. But again, I can concur that the signs of physical abuse were not evident to anyone until the very, very end. That's no excuse, though. There was definitely serious neglect going on, and it would have been far better for the agency to have pushed the court. I mean, I'm just amazed that the fact that the woman refused to show up in court with court orders, she right. was basically in contempt of court,
yep.
and no one forced her to go that last step, which might have saved Matthew. It's just, it's frustrating as heck to realize they were that close to saving him, but gave up at the very end.
What did you think of Commissioner Katz's testimony yesterday?
You know, she's obviously in a very defensive position, and she's defending, you know, the failure of the agency to save a child, and so it's a tragic failure, and so she's put into a pretty difficult position. I watched the dynamics between her and the child advocate, which were interesting, because the child advocate is there to critique what went wrong and try to prevent this again, and I think it started out that there was an extremely defensive position she was in, but I watched as the dynamics went on. And there was more, the child advocate and she were, I think, getting closer together as the discussion continued, that there was a better understanding of what happened. And in that sense, I think there was some good that came out of the hearing itself. The child advocate, Sarah Egan, is a tremendous person, and she wrote an 80-page report on this with all the details in it. And she's very passionate defending children. So Connecticut is a fortune to have someone like Sarah representing our children, and she herself has a child who has special needs, and so I think it meant a lot to her personally in this case too. And by the way, I have a nephew who's autistic, so I could understand and relate to what, you know, the tragedy here even more so than normal. But I think that she was moving towards, she definitely acknowledged that the agency made mistakes, and she has already initiated changes in the internal practices of the agency to prevent this from ever happening again. And I think there's a great deal of frustration, not only on her part, but I watched her associates from DCF who were accompanied her, and I think everyone was just personally affected by this tragic situation.
Senator, some, including the leader of your caucus and the Hartford Courant, have called for Commissioner Katz to resign. What is your position on that?
Well, it's certainly a fair question to raise. Commissioner Katz has been there for 7 years, and there's been a series of tragedies resulting in many cases in the death of a child. And so it's a natural instinct to call for the resignation of the person heading the agency. I want to listen a little bit more and look into this a little bit more before I get to that conclusion. Nonetheless, it's definitely something that is a fair question to ask, and it should be delved into more. And as co-chair of the Children's Committee, we're going to be taking a very close look, even more so than ever, on the responsibilities and the failures of the DCF. And by the way, there was legislation passed that through the legislature that got through the Senate. It was Senate Bill 894, which called for closer oversight of the agency, and it didn't get called for a vote in the House. And I wish that that legislation had passed. It would have been too late for Matthew because, of course, he passed away at the beginning of the year, but it might have helped us to keep on top of this. And I'm hoping in this new session that SB 894 or a version of it, which will call for closer observation and control of the agency by the legislature, I hope that will pass, and that if that's one of the good things that may come out of this terrible, terrible tragedy.
Senator, on another note before we wrap up, we interviewed the realtor who has erected the billboard on I-84 asking people, where should Governor Malloy move? So I'm going to throw the question out to you. Where should Governor Malloy move?
As far away from Connecticut as possible, I would say. Dan, you know, he's failed the state many times in so many ways, not only in terms of his tax policies, but as you know, I've been an advocate for changing this horrendous early release law, which lets violent criminals out of jail early, free to maraud and roam our neighborhoods and molest our women and children again. And so he's failed the state both in terms of its economics, he's failed the state in terms of tax policy, he's failed the state in terms of criminal policy, and he's ultimately responsible for the success or failure of our different agencies, including DCF. I'm fortunate to be there. The state needs reform in so many different ways, yeah. Dan, and I'm fortunate enough to be there. I intend to play a very active role in not only the reform of our criminal laws, but the reform of our tax laws and our economic policy. And that's the only good thing that may come of this crisis that we're in right now with respect to the state of Connecticut, is it's going to force us to make real change, not just superficial change. And I want to be there to help make a difference.
Senator, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us. If we don't chat, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year.
And the same to you and your audience, Dan. And thank you for the vital role that you and Brad play in keeping the people of Connecticut informed about these important issues.
You're very
Merry
kind.
Christmas, Dan.
You too. Take care. We're running out of time during this segment.